When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Tomorrow.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. Biden's inflation blame game never seems to end. He's a car salesman selling EV lemons to people who aren't buying, and he's spreading DEI mandates like a virulent woke virus throughout the government. Anyway, Vivek Ramaswamy will weigh in on all that in just a moment. Plus, we got Jason Trenert, our own Brian Brenberg. Message to Wall Street, no rate cuts. Then Senator Kevin Cramer won a big one to keep gas-powered cars. But what's he doing for us lately? And 330,000 illegal immigrants flown into Florida. We've got Florida House member Anna Paulina Luna and Pennsylvania Scott Perry. And will Iran retaliate against Israel? We'll ask former Israeli Ambassador David Friedman. All that and more. But first up, the Edward Lawrence is live at the White House with all the latest. Edward, what you got?
Yeah, Larry, the White House trying to re-message the economy here. The president trying to turn around those sagging poll numbers. But the fact is that prices remain 19% higher from the month President Biden took office here. This is what the president said, in fact, about inflation in the Rose Garden yesterday. Listen to this.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office, where inflation was skyrocketing, and we have a plan to deal with it.
But the president was wrong. In fact, Larry, you know, inflation was under 2% for 11 consecutive months leading up to January 2021. And the month President Biden was sworn in, inflation was 1.4%, not exactly skyrocketing. Here's the White House press secretary today cleaning up the president's comments. Listen.
When we walked in, the pandemic, the disruption of the supply chain, all of these things were happening when the president took office.
But the president didn't say the supply chain was being disrupted. He said inflation was skyrocketing.
But that's what he was referring to, right? That's what was going on. Those were the things that were happening right before us. The pandemic, it was taking thousands of lives a day when he took office.
So let's look at some of how this started and where it's going. The president is still pushing his forced transition to electric. Electricity is up 29.5% since the day President Biden came into office. Go to the grocery store and all food is up 21% in that time.
They're doing everything wrong. They're implementing taxes. They're continuing spending. Their assault on energy. Their assault on banks and the overregulation. And what the worst part is, there's no course correction taking place.
The president saying that his plan is working, Larry.
Yeah, his plan is working. You know what?
Left you speechless.
You know, he's entitled to his opinions about policy, yeah. But he's not entitled to lie about facts. That's the problem I'm having. Okay, policies, I get it. He's a liberal. Yeah, you just can't lie with impunity. Anyway. Edward Lawrence, thanks a million. Appreciate it. Now, folks, want to hear a great stat? Think about this. A Gallup poll just asked voters about electric vehicles. This is maybe the biggest centerpiece of Joe Biden's policies. Talks about it all the time. His green bureaucracy spends their days telling Americans how they're supposed to live, what they can and cannot buy. You know the litany, dishwashers, microwaves, gas furnaces, gas stoves, shower heads, gas-powered cars. Oh, my gosh. The list is practically endless. all in the name of climate change. Remember, our friend Bjorn Lomborg estimates that global government spending on climate change, wait for this, each year is now $27 trillion each year and hasn't moved the needle one bit. But back to Gallup's EVs. In just one year, the percentage of people who might consider buying an EV has dropped from 43% to 35%. The percentage of people who are seriously considering buying an EV has dropped from 12% to 9%. And those saying they'd never buy an EV has gone up from 41% to 48%. These are staggering numbers. And car salesman Joe Biden is out there selling these lemons. You know what? Biden's EVs are the modern-day Edsel of our time. Remember Edsel? Ford brought the car out in 1957, and it promptly became one of the biggest failures in automotive history. And 3 years later, they had to bury it. So I'm going to bet at some point in the presidential campaign, Mr. Biden buries talking about EVs. Well, give that a maybe. Meanwhile, Obama advisor David Axelrod has told Biden to drop Bidenomics completely and instead adopt more of a Clintonite message of I feel your pain and we're working harder to do better. But that's not what Biden's doing. Instead, he's blaming Donald Trump for everything that's gone wrong. Inflation in particular, which is not only stubborn, but it's actually moving significantly higher, like an inflation thief stealing middle-class wages in the middle of the night. Hat tip to the Wall Street Journal. And there aren't going to be any Fed rate cuts to juice Biden's sagging election year economy. In fact, real worker wages are going down again. And over the course of his presidency, real hourly wages have dropped 2.5%. Real weekly wages have dropped 4.5%. But Biden keeps blaming Trump, who was inaugurated nearly 7 years ago and first declared his presidency almost 9 years ago. Enough already. This is the dumbest blame game in history. Okay, fine. Let's look at the scoreboard for a moment. Under Biden, the level of the CPI has gone up over 19% in 38 months. His average inflation rate per year is 6.1%. It is the highest in 40 years. Under Trump, for his entire four-year term, the CPI level went up only 7% or 1.9% yearly. Blame Trump? For what exactly? So you think Joe Biden would try to convince working class folks that he's going to bring down inflation by, for example, cutting government spending? Now, that's a thought, but he won't say that because, A, he doesn't believe it, and B, he's not doing it. We're halfway through the FY24 budget year, and the deficit is now running $1 trillion, halfway through the year, on track, of course, for $2 trillion for the whole year, which is basically what the CBO baseline shows, roughly $2 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see. That is most certainly not going to reduce inflation or increase the take-home pay of working folks or solve their affordability crisis. And coming back to Joe Biden's centerpiece Green New Deal policy, the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act is probably going to cost around $1 trillion in the years ahead. For what? For cars people don't want? For federal slush funds for politically favored investors and producers who love the greatest corporate welfare in history, but whose companies are going to go bankrupt in due course? By the way, have you seen a lot of electric chargers in your suburban neighborhoods? If your EV battery runs out, can you seriously call a tow truck operator who's going to have a handy electric charger connection in his vehicle? I doubt it. Have you taken a look at auto insurance rates, which have blown sky high, 20% annually in just the last quarter, because EVs are more dangerous and harder to repair? But Biden keeps blaming Trump for everything. And he keeps spreading untruths about Trump's record and his own, Biden's, spending and deficits and debt creation. More untruths. That's not a platform. It's not a future vision. Every time Biden lies, he diminishes confidence in his ability to lead in government. One big reason his economic polls are in the high 20s or low 30s is that people have no confidence that his policies will provide future growth and opportunity. Actually, they didn't even know what his policies are, except blaming Trump. And you know what? That's a political loser, if I've ever seen one. Okay, that's my little riff. Now, great fun. Joining us now is Vivek Ramaswamy, former 2024 presidential candidate, author of Nation of Victims, Identity Politics, The Death of Merit, and The Path Back to Excellence. Vivek, thank you ever so much for coming back on. We'd love to have you. Just a few moments. You know, the cost of living, inflation is going up. Real wages for working folks is going down. Biden's sitting around blaming Donald Trump and knocking out $2 trillion deficits a year. I've never seen anything so bad. And that includes selling this lemon EV thing, which is, in fact, the Ford Edsel of our time. What do you make of it, Vivek?
Well, first thing is simple. End the electric vehicle subsidies. If you want to buy an electric vehicle, you're free to do that. The beauty is we live in a free country. But you should not expect the government or the taxpayer base to pay for it. And I think putting an end to that is something that actually most Americans, outside of a small minority on each of the two coasts, actually gets behind. You don't want to subsidize your neighbor's car selection choices. But this is the kind of capitalism, which isn't really capitalism at all. It's state-directed capitalism, Biden administration-directed capitalism, that's led us to the economic plight that we're in. Prices are up. Interest rates have gone up to fight the inflation, while wages in many parts of the country have remained flat. And so whatever myths they'll spin up, Larry, you know well about Bidenomics or whatever they want to call it, the numbers speak for themselves for the people in their daily lives. And I think if we can seize on that message to offer an alternative economic vision, to say that capitalism is still the best known system known to man to lift us up from poverty, that we don't have to apologize for our success, whether in the middle class or in the wealthy categories. You know what? That's what's going to lift this country up. We shouldn't apologize for it. And success will unite this country in a way that Biden has not.
You know, Vivek, I don't think we should apologize for freedom and free consumer choice. I mean, the Bidens are trying to jam down so many things in the name of climate change and spending all this money, right? The misnamed Inflation Reduction Act is all about spending $1 trillion more for climate change, frankly, on stuff people don't want. But as you say, okay, let them choose. Just take the subsidies away. You could save $1 trillion. And I'll bet you, Vivek, if Mr. Trump wins, his budget people are going to go after those subsidies right away. Top of the list. I mean it. I've talked to some people in the budget area, people that I worked with when I was in the government, going after that stuff right away. In fact, that stuff, you know, canceling that stuff will help. You could support continuing Mr. Trump's tax cuts and growing the economy at 4 or 5% instead of 2%. You follow my logic? We shouldn't be free. Free consumer choice is part of freedom. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Absolutely. And the fact that we have to sit here talking about this right now, Larry, these are basic concepts. You think about those kinds of changes. Yes, of course, the Trump administration should take on that type of low hanging fruit. There's a lot of ingenious ideas we might need to pursue for this country. But this is base level stuff. Let consumers choose what they actually want to buy. That's the way our system has worked for 250 years. That's what made America the greatest economic experiment in the history of mankind. We don't need to reinvent Soviet models of state-directed, you know, you could say socialist, you could even say worse than socialist models of government control of an economy that is the alternative left's vision. Yep. But the beauty of this is most Americans reject it. And I don't care if they traditionally call themselves Democrat, you brought up Clintonite Democrats or Republicans. Most people in this country agree that you should be able to achieve the maximum of your potential with your own hard work and commitment and dedication without anybody penalizing you with a tax code or a regulatory infrastructure that penalizes success. And that's the project of the modern left. You see it in our educational system to our economy, and we're done with it. We need a path back to excellence in the United States of America. That's what this country was founded on.
Vivek, I got another one you're going to love. Biden government making a very big push, putting out an executive order that all federal bureaucracy people, everybody, HHS, education, you name it, everybody wants this. I got a whole list. SBA, instead of abiding by the Hatch Act, they are going to get paid administrative leave to go out and electioneer, which sounds to me a lot like voter harvesting. We know they're liberals. Here's more, Vivek. DEI orders now running through the State Department. This is just all in the last 24, 48 hours. And the Defense Department, okay? And then, of course, you've got this other business where they're trying to push through the Climate Corps, $8 billion for 50,000 climate people. I call them climateers. The little fuzzy woke climateers is what they are. They're trying to mobilize the entire government to re-elect Joe Biden. I've never seen anything like it. And furthermore, the emphasis on DEI, which is the exact antithesis of a merit-based bureaucracy, which is what I think we ought to have. What do you think about this? This is all new in recent days, Vivek.
Well, you think about mobilizing the federal bureaucracy to re-elect Joe Biden. Don't leave out the top of the list. That's the DOJ and the FBI and the federal police state as well. There's three-word answer to this, Larry, and I stand by it. I said it during my own presidential campaign. I stand by it right now. Shut it down. Yeah. We should not have millions of federal bureaucrats crawling around Washington, D.C., clogging up the pores of our constitutional republic. There are three branches of government in the U.S. Constitution: executive, legislative, and judicial. There is no fourth administrative branch. And one of the things we've seen in the Biden administration, which I think is really one of the most frightening things we've seen in modern American history, in all of American history, is the weaponization of that administrative state to do the political bidding of the administration, getting done through the back door of the deep state, the administrative state, the bureaucrats, what they could not get done through the front door of lawmaking. That is a danger to the future of our constitutional republic. And yes, we've seen that at the level of DOJ and FBI. Look at multiple prosecutions of the lead contender of the opposition party. You know what? That's never happened in American history. It's happening now. But it's not just at the level of the DOJ. It is rampant across three-letter agencies across the board. And I think that is the real threat to our constitutional republic today, is those unelected bureaucrats, the people who we never elected to run the government, who are wielding political power, backdoor regulatory power across Americans and businesses across this country. And the right answer is get in there. You can't reform that beast. You have to slay it, shut it down, and that's what it's going to take. And I think a second Trump term is going to be poised to go even further than that first Trump term in actually getting that job done. And if there's one thing that will save this republic, it is to shut down that fourth branch of government.
Well, amen to that, Vivek. I got 30 seconds for you, Vivek. The thing that's so troubling is these executive orders, which, by the way, are being challenged and with the Supreme Court. But these executive orders are basically to use the current bureaucracy to go out and, I'll say, win the election or maybe steal the election for Joe Biden. He is trying to mobilize bureaucracies like we have never seen before. His throw out the Hatch Act, Vivek, and politicize everything. Please give me your last word.
Well, my last word, I don't mean to be foreboding about this, but I think what we're seeing is just the tip of the iceberg, Larry. This system and these people have made clear they will stop at nothing to keep one man, Donald J. Trump, from retaking the White House. And so I fear the next 7 months we're going to see unprecedented steps we've never seen in American history. We already have. And it's up to us to stay one step ahead, explain to the American people this is what we stand for, and deliver a landslide of historic proportion. That's what's going to be required here.
Terrific stuff, Vivek. Always energizing to talk to you. Thank you ever so much, my friend. We'll see you soon. All right, folks, coming up here on Kudlow, Jason Trenard and Brian Brenberg, a message to Wall Street. No rate hikes. No rate cuts. I'm sorry. No rate cuts. There could be a mysterious rate hike, though. Hang with Kudlow. You know, we shoot him straighter than the Masters golf tournament. Honestly, hang with Kudlow right here. Much more fun. I'll be right back.
Have to be cleaned and the marble has to be maintained, but really what you're doing is preserving history.
Yes, that's exactly right. We're trying to preserve this beautiful building, this memorial, for future generations.
Lindy Gulick is an architectural conservator at the National Park Service and spends her life caring for the stone and marble that make up the Lincoln Memorial, now celebrating 100 years as a national symbol of unity.
Thank you.
So the material itself represents a unified country. Some of it coming from Massachusetts, some of it coming from Colorado, and some from the heart of the Confederacy.
Yeah, that's right. So the Lincoln statue that you see in the chamber, that's white marble from Georgia. And you see the beautiful floor, that's Tennessee pink marble.
And the main structure is held up by 36 Doric columns, representing the 36 states that were part of the Union when Lincoln took office. And his index finger of his right hand is slightly raised, a plea of openness for Southern states to return to the Union. But the memorial doesn't just honor our history. It has in itself become part of our history, particularly civil rights history. In 1939, opera singer Marian Anderson performed a concert here for an integrated audience after being blocked by the Daughters of the American Revolution from singing at Constitution Hall. Since then, the grounds have laid witness to over 100 protests for racial equality, culminating in 1963 with one of America's most seminal moments. Exactly why America's first black president chose the 99-foot-tall monument for his pre-inaugural address.
Behind me, watching over the Union he saved, sits the man who in so many ways made this day possible.
And in modern times, it's been a place where Americans gather in strength and sorrow. So obviously they built it to memorialize a great man, but the grounds ended up inspiring great events.
It was selected for that purpose. John Hay recommended that this site be selected to line up in the National Mall, in line with the Capitol, the Washington Monument, to create this aura.
John O'Brien is a Lincoln historian and president of the Lincoln Group. He sees some of the same divisions plaguing the country that Lincoln saw, including ultra-partisanship. Lincoln, more than anyone, understood how fragile democracy could be.
Indeed, he stood on the precipice of the great division of the country. But his characteristics always brought him back to, how do I pull this together? How do I reconcile the differences in this great nation? He always viewed himself as president of the entire country, not just the North.
It's something Lindy thinks about every day as she smooths the Lincoln marble. So like democracy, the stone here is really strong, but you really have to preserve it and care for it to last.
Yes, that we do. This is really important for our future and for the history of America.
An American future made possible by one man's historical sacrifice and the memorial that has honored him for 100 years. In Washington, D.C., Douglas Kennedy, Fox News.
Nobody.
The consumer is strong. The balance sheets are strong.
Brings you America's business news.
There's so much going on.
And what it means for you.
We want to get some breaking news to you right now. Fox Business Alert.
Like Fox Business, keeping you ahead of the curve.
All the insider selling by some of the richest people on earth.
With insight into the impact of U.S. and global markets.
That's where the recipe for inflation comes.
From the people you can trust.
Let's have some fun with this.
Fox Business, America's business network.
All right, a message for Wall Street. I think no rate cuts. Joining us now to talk about it, they may agree or disagree with me, Jason Trenet, Chairman and CEO of Strategic Securities, and our own Brian Brenberg, host of the Big Money Show. Gentlemen, welcome. Let us play a clip from Joe Biden. I want you to react to this.
Well, I do stand by my prediction that before the year is out, there'll be a rate cut. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office, where inflation was skyrocketing, and we have a plan to deal with it.
Okay, so there's three things going on in there. One is there's going to be rate cuts. Two is he inherited skyrocketing inflation. And three, what was the three one? He's going to do something about it.
They have a plan.
They have a plan to do it. All right, which is wonderful. I had this in my riff. I don't know if you heard about it. Deficits first half of fiscal 24, you're already at $1 trillion. You're going to hit $2 trillion. The CBO baseline is $2 trillion as far as I can see. But all right, go ahead. Jason, you start. You've got three options here. Wonderful Biden quotes.
Well, first, I may agree with him on the fact that the Fed is going to ease, mainly because I think the Fed is hell-bent on easing. I don't think they should. I don't think they should ease, but I think they will.
All right, go ahead.
They don't want President Trump to win. I don't think the staff. The second thing I would say is the idea that they inherited the inflation problem.
But they do. You're saying they do want him to win.
They do.
So they'll juice the economy. Well,
they want Biden to win. They want Biden.
Yes.
They do not want President Trump to win.
Got it.
Staff. Secondly, I would say the idea that they inherited the inflation crisis is just it's factually untrue.
Right.
If you look at just the data, inflation was when on inauguration day we've done our common man CPI. People's standard of living has deteriorated by about 7 or 8%.
What's a couple of ingredients in that? It's
precisely the opposite. As you suggested, I think I got the idea from you. It's the reverse core. So it's food. Food, energy, shelter, clothing, utilities,
insurance. By the way,
insurance.
There you go. So insurance is exploding.
So it's
especially EV. The stupid EV insurance is up 20% at an annual rate in the first quarter, according to Larry Lindsey. Please continue.
No, so it's all the things you have to buy, right? Because for most people, eating
and how much is that up?
That's up 22% since 2001, since inauguration
day.
And wages are up. Last year, it's up 3.9% year over year.
Wow.
So it's outpacing CPI.
Mm-hmm. Brian, go to you. You think the Fed's going to cut? You think the Fed will cut rates?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I hear what you're saying on the politics of it, but the data doesn't support it. And I think they're going to have a very hard time saying we're going to go ahead with this. Biden's going to hate it. Here's what's going to happen, though, I think. You know, Biden says we're going to get a cut. But watch what Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders start to do in the next few months, because those are the guys, they're already behind the mouthpiece. They're going to ramp up the calls for these cuts
it impossible for the Fed to cut.
Well, that's the thing.
Because it politicized. If the socialists are calling the tune, the Fed looks like a bunch of weenie dummies.
Call me crazy.
Make that woke weenie
Call
dummies.
Me crazy, but I think Powell's not going to react
well to
that.
He's not. I'm with you.
And he's going to say, you know what? We're not going to cut.
You're sitting on, Taylor Riggs said this when we were talking outside on the 20th floor. Jay Powell's new favorite thing, core services X rents, all right? If you don't like it, you don't like it, but that's supposedly his new rate. It's up 8.2% in the last 3 months at an annual rate. And the other measures are up 4.5% at an annual rate. I mean, honestly, market price indicators. Remember that? Wayne Angel, Manley Johnson, Alan Greenspan. Mm-hmm. Gold is up. Mm-hmm. CRBs, Goldman Sachs, that stuff is booming. The bond rates are rising again. What's the case, Jason?
Well, listen.
A savvy investor like you.
Well, but look at financial assets: Bitcoin, gold, stocks, credit spreads are tight as a drum. Everything is telling you that financial conditions are easy. They're not. The case is getting worse for the Fed. To ease, not better.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I just want to go back reading. You read Larry Lindsey? He's a brilliant economist.
That's great.
It's great fun to read Larry Lindsey. Anyway, he's an old friend, dear friend. He has not only changed his mind, and he thinks there. No, I don't care what the forward futures people wrong. They've been wrong for 300 years. They're going to be wrong this year. Okay, now they're moving it to September. Okay, yeah, sure. He reminded us, Larry Lindsey, give him full credit, that Janet Yellen, who's been such a poor Treasury Secretary, but a pretty good Fed chair, fair enough, that she raised the Fed funds rate right after the election in 2016. In fact, the Fed meeting was in December, and she raised the Fed funds target. And I think she raised it a couple more times in 2017 because inflation pressures were going. I'm suggesting, Brian Brenberg, I'll start with you, that Jay Powell is reading that playbook.
Oh.
Okay? Not only will there be no rate cuts, but they may have to raise rates once or twice after the election.
Okay, let me say this. This is sort of a watershed moment right now. You're going to go one of two ways. If you do that, what it tells you is the Fed may be reestablishing real independence. If he reads that playbook.
Yes.
But you make a good case. If he cuts, no mistake, right now, given the data, that means you've got a hopelessly politicized Fed. One is a great move, and one is terrible.
And you have potentially worse and worse inflation story. Yeah. That would be a repeat of the 1970s. Then you'd see the dollar crashing, gold is already up, commodities. I mean, you can't do it, Jason.
No.
How can a smart investor like you suggest that they're going to cut rates?
Listen,
I don't understand.
I'm just trying to be realistic.
Get Jason Trinidad, he's the smartest investor on Wall Street.
No, but I'm just telling you what I think is likely, not what I think should happen.
Yeah, what should happen?
Give me the Jason Trinidad. You're now running a Treasury Department.
Which may come true someday. What should they do?
Well, listen, they should stop spending money they don't have.
You can't
run budget deficits that are 7% of GDP.
Right.
You've never done that with the unemployment rate below 7.
Unemployment rate below 4.
Right. So now we're doing it with unemployment rate below 4.
Now that we need
so it, this is there is no coordination between monetary and fiscal policy, right. And that's why it's impossible, in my opinion, to put the toothpaste back in the tube as far as inflation is concerned.
Yeah.
65% of the budget is indexed to inflation itself. Getting to 2 is a long shot.
Last word, Brian, 20 seconds.
The inflation resuscitation plan, i.e. Biden's spending, is going to make the Fed's work impossible.
I know. Isn't that something? And Biden is out there with a straight face telling us he's cutting the budget deficit.
Sunglasses on.
You guys are pretty damn good. Jason Trenor and Brian Brennberg, thank you very much. Folks, don't forget, please, you catch Brian with Taylor Riggs and Jackie DeAngelis. Weekdays, 1 p.m. Eastern every day in the Big Money Show. It is a fabulous show right here on Fox Business. Coming up on Kudlow, Biden flying 333,000 illegals into Florida in the dead of night. All right? Love that. We'll talk about it with Florida Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna and Congressman Scott Perry. Plus, Senator Kevin Cramer, one of my favorite friends, he finally scored a win on gas-powered cars. But you're only as good as your last trade. What's he going to do next? I'm Kudlow. Stick around.
Mornings with Maria on Fox Business.
Every morning, I want to empower my viewers to move their families forward and seize the day.
All the news that drives the markets and beyond. Mornings with Maria on Fox Business. Invested in you.
It's up to the employees at Hoover to make sure there's enough damn energy for all. People like Penny De La Pena. Penny's one of the 16 electricians who are charged with ensuring that Hoover's product finds its way to American homes. And much of that comes through maintaining the infrastructure that makes the dam's output possible. Things her colleagues might take for granted, like, say, the elevator.
This is how we get to work, so it's very important and critical to the operation of this dam.
That's because 600-foot elevators like these are the only means through which the dam's employees can access the entire facility, from the generators on the powerhouse floor to the machine shop dedicated to servicing them. But none of that is much use without a way of accessing it.
Going down.
So today, Penny and her partner Eric are performing a critical inspection to ensure that this particular elevator is working as it should.
Ready?
Ready.
Almost everything but the electronics in the elevator are original parts from the 1930s, which can contribute to serious issues if they're not caught early.
When you integrate electronics with old working parts that are pretty sturdy and hardy, the electronics tend to get a little finicky.
And with their busiest time of year already upon them, it's best if they deal with any finickiness now before it gets any hotter. So they're headed to the very bottom of the shaft, where the elevator's most critical components are housed, including the counterweight that keeps it moving up and down.
We'll look and make sure that the hardware's intact on the doghouse, check the rollers, that they're got tension on the bar, and that there's no chunks, pieces missing from the rollers. The jam nuts are on the springs, and that we have tension here, and we do.
In other words, all looks as it should. And while Eric finishes inspecting the counterweight, Penny focuses on her specialty, electronics.
Everything that's electronic essentially comes to this piece here. Instantly, you know something's wrong if there's a smell, burnt smell, or discoloration. I just run my hand through these wires, making sure everything's connected. No wires are loose.
Think we're good?
I think so. Let's head back up.
All right.
Tell us what you're going to do for us today and with us today.
So basically, I just wanted to show you guys how to ride a skateboard correctly.
Okay.
I think that's the base level, is put your feet in the right spot, make sure you don't fall every time you get on the board. So there's two stances to a skateboard.
Whoa.
That was really good.
That was amazing.
There's riding stance and there's pushing stance. So pushing is how you get around on the skateboard. You push.
Right.
And then riding is riding the board.
But you got to transition from the pushing to the riding.
Yes.
That's a problem.
So, and the key thing to do is quickly. A lot of people get really nervous and they spend and then you're spending a bunch of time on one foot.
Yeah,
you want to just, boom.
Is everybody regular foot?
Boom.
So you're goofy.
No, I'm not goofy.
I'm regular.
Okay.
So this, you go.
If you're right-handed, your left foot goes
first. Right,
that's all you get.
There's actually no connection.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Will's done that. He's got
some
skills.
Yeah, you're doing perfect.
Will knows what he's doing.
He's got some skills.
Yeah.
Maybe this competition.
And then, there you go. You turned your foot, Emily. That was good.
Look at that. He put like
You could be doing like an 80s flatland competition.
What is that? Oh, look at that.
Where did this come from?
How long did it? There we go. There we go.
Nice.
How long does it take to get to like Will level or basic?
About 10 minutes.
I wonder how to do that.
Not too long.
Not too long? Yeah, I mean, you can turn that front. Good. And there you go.
You're already there.
There, and you're doing it. And I would say the only thing is if you start to feel like you're going to fall, bend your knees. Stay low.
Bend your knees.
Yeah.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business. Invested in you.
All right, let's head up to Capitol Hill. Joining us now, Florida Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna and Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry. Welcome to both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anna, you've got a problem. This, according to the numbers that I've found, the illegal immigrants flying over into the United States, bypassing GO, bypassing borders, bypassing TSA, 386,000. But, Anna, the numbers I came up with is 326,000 have gone directly into Florida. You are, as they say, the league leader. You're the major league leader. How is this possible? How is this policy possible? And what, if anything, can either of you do about it?
Well, obviously, this administration has been doing everything they can to not only lie to the American people about the true numbers in this country. So to be clear, there's upwards of now over 22 million illegals in this country. But referencing Florida specifically, our governor has set forward some of the strongest immigration and counter illegal immigration laws in the country. And so, frankly, if we come across them, they're getting deported. Whether or not Biden wants anything to do with it, he's going to not see that happen in the state of Florida.
But what do you do? I mean, this is an honest question, almost a technical question. If they're flying them in from Venezuela or someplace, what can you do about it? I mean, I know Governor DeSantis has been very tough on this, to his great credit, but what can you do?
Well, I can tell you that we already did our jobs as Congress is concerned. We passed H.R. 2 last year, which was what our bar was for border security. And the Senate has been sitting on this. They've been, again, lying to the American people about what's really happening on immigration. And I know my colleague, Representative Scott Perry, has been on the floor multiple times saying, hey, are we going to honestly allow the Senate to continue to sit on this, or are we going to get tough at the negotiating table, which is exactly what we've been doing.
The other thing we could do, Larry, and Anna and I tried our best, but we could take away the funding that this administration, the Biden administration, has been using to fly those people into America illegally. We could also take away the funding that they're using to bring them across the border illegally. The other thing that we can all do is coming in November, and you know what that is.
Yes. No, I get that. But, Scott, let me stay with you on this. To Anna's point, you've got H.R. 2, which is a very good bill. I guess the Senate won't move it. They won't look at it. Can you stick to your guns on this? I mean, I know you've got a Ukraine funding bill, Ukraine, Israel, and so forth, but people are focused on the border. The border is the border, and it's so important. Is there a way, is there a strategy as we move into this section of Congress, Scott, to move H.R. 2, to press it, to threaten no action on other bills, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to put up the options. I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that my colleague from Florida agrees with the same. Any bill that is a must-pass bill, including this supplemental that they're envisioning, whatever it is, and Anna and I don't know what's in it. We haven't seen the text or anything yet, but assuming they're going to come up with something, we're going to insist likely on passing not only H.R. 2, the most righteous border security bill ever to come out of Congress, but also metrics associated with that. Because just passing a bill, Larry, as you know, is not going to force the Biden administration to follow the law. There's already hundreds of laws they're not following now. That's not going to be enough. It's going to have to be tied to metrics. So if they actually want to get that money for Ukraine or whatever else it is, they must perform first. We want cash on the barrelhead. We want to see the numbers come down to the level that is described in any legislation, and then we will give some of whatever money that we would agree to. But that's a concept we need to see. We need to put the meat on the bones of that and need to see the particulars. But that's how it can be done.
Anna, let me go to a different subject, but a related subject. You're talking about defunding these air flights and other matters. You know, we're getting at very hot inflation numbers, heating up again. And the budget deficit for the first half of the fiscal year 24, as you guys probably know, is already $1 trillion. And the year's only half over. You're going to hit $2 trillion. You may go above $2 trillion. There is so much spending which causes inflation, which causes working folks to lose their wages, you know, stealing their money in the dead of night. Any plans up your sleeve in the upcoming sessions to once again go after spending? Joe Biden won't do it. All he does is tell untruths about it. Is there something you guys can do? If nothing else, make some noise about it.
Well, honestly, right now we are making that noise. I am very proud to report that I've never voted for an increase in spending or a CR, so I'm going to stick to that. But, you know, I do think that this November we're going to have a different president that understands how to run a country and how to run a budget. And so we're hopeful that once that happens that we can, if anything, balance a budget. That's something Congress hasn't done in a long time. But also, too, I think get back to those single subject appropriation bills. That's something that we actually both fought for back in January. And I think, again, you know, if the American people are really tired of what we're seeing up here, because I know we stop sending us the same old people.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask both of you last few seconds. Scott first. I think President Biden will seek executive budget impoundment authority. This goes all the way back. The last president to have it was Richard Nixon, and they took that away in the Watergate Congress. But for the last 200 plus years, presidents could impound budgets that were either inefficient or irrelevant, nonconforming. Will you back him on that, Scott Perry? There may be a constitutional issue. I'm sorry. Will you back Trump on that budget impoundment authority?
I was going to say, I don't see President Biden looking for an impoundment
slip
authority,
of the tongue.
But I would back President Trump on the impoundment authority. And quite honestly, anybody in Congress, other than my good friend from Florida and a few others here that are actually willing to rein in spending, the first place it starts, and we could be working on it right now, is setting the top line. But Chuck Schumer and President Biden have absolutely no interest in actually setting a top line that is lower than the top line now. And as you know, every 100 days or so, an extra $1 trillion being clipped off. And it's just going to keep going under this administration, which is why the cost of living is going to keep going up. And you're not going to see any rate cuts. And if you do, they're going to be at the end of the summer, just in time for the election.
Yeah, no rate cuts. If they pull that, the Fed will destroy itself. But anyway, you two are great. Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna, thank you very, very much. Scott, Congressman Scott Perry,
thank you. Thanks.
Good to see you again. All right, folks, we're going to shift gears to the other side. Senator Kevin Cramer. Now, Mr. Cramer finally got a win. He got a win on stopping the end of gas-powered cars. But you know, Senator Cramer, and you know how high regard I have for you. You're a great friend. On Wall Street, they say you're only as good as your last trade. So I want to know what happens next. Everyone fears you. Yeah. You stopped this end to gas-powered cars and these crazy tailpipe emissions. What's your next campaign, Senator Cramer?
Well, I think it's in permitting reform, quite honestly. If we want to stay with transportation, we want to stay with energy, we want to stay with environmental policy, let's get some permitting reform that allows us to build out the type of infrastructure that we need for gas, you know, gas-powered cars and electric generation and moving that electric generation and distributing it to market. But I think we're going to have some more of these types of fights where federalism is actually on the floor, where the overreach of the federal government into the powers of the states and the powers of the elected officials is stymied, both by Congress, but also by courts. Because remember, this success I had yesterday in overturning the Biden rule on gas-fired cars and, more importantly, greenhouse gas emissions measurements, that's just one of many of these fights where this court that has been really developed by Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell over the last few years, not just the Supreme Court, but other courts, have been very clear with using the major questions doctrine. A lack of a prohibition is not a license for a federal agency to do whatever they want. Same with the Waters of the United States, return power to states. Mm. Now the Supreme Court is going to take up a Chevron doctrine case. Mm. All of this is slowly turning the ship of the Constitution back in line with what the founders had in mind.
Incredibly important. You are so right. It all originally went back to Pennsylvania versus EPA. So it's very, very, stopping LNG, new LNG permits is crazy. It's the stupidest thing in the world. And the last one I'm going to give you, we were talking about budget cuts with some prominent House members a moment ago. Kevin, you look at the latest Gallup poll. Nobody wants EVs. And the Inflation Reduction Act, misnamed, spends about $1 trillion on subsidies and corporate welfare handouts that nobody wants, and it should be repealed. Or a President Trump should impoundment. I'll give you the last word.
No, I love the idea of impoundment, Larry, but we need to take a look at all of this tax policy that provides these subsidies and these credits to everybody's favorite type of energy. Mm-hmm. The production tax credit for wind, for example, has been around for over 30 years. And I understand, Larry, I'm not completely against early technologies or emerging technologies that need a boost in the early stages that they have promise. But these early investments become permanent investments, and they just become pigs at the trough, and then they compete with efficient energy like coal-generated and natural gas-generated and nuclear-generated electricity, where everybody has to invest twice. But these subsidies, Larry, when I was an energy regulator, wind companies used to pay utilities to take the wind from them because they only got the subsidy if they produced something. Can you imagine? Upside down. So, I'm all for eliminating all that. If we're going to do anything, let's make it fuel neutral.
All right, Senator Kramer. Fearsome. Senator Kramer, he just kicks some butt. All right, thank you. Good to see you. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, meat question. Will Iran retaliate against Israel? Israel knocking off all the Iranian Quds commanders. So we'll ask former Israeli ambassador, Mr. David Friedman. I'm Kudlow. Please stick around. Lots more to do.
I try to bring a positive perspective. People may call that naive, but I've got a pretty good track record.
Cavuto Coast to Coast on Fox Business. Invested in you.
Of the many materials that comprise our country, none are quite so essential as steel, which is why every year we forge upwards of 72 million tons of the stuff, more than enough to build 1,000 aircraft carriers. But instead, the bulk of it goes into framing our cityscapes, our highways, our power lines, and the countless other mainstays that make modern civilization possible. And these days, thanks to some pretty aggressive expansions all over the nation, the demand for it is reaching record highs, sending production facilities everywhere into overdrive. Facilities like Gerdau Steel in Midlothian, Texas. Here, production needs have skyrocketed from 3,000 tons a day to a far more ambitious 5,000. And to create that kind of output, hundreds of employees are literally working 24/7 to turn mountains of scrap metal into the all-important alloy that frames our nation.
When did the whole I want to cycle across the world idea start?
I had no intention of cycling the world when I started. I just knew that I wanted to see Vietnam by bicycle. And within the 30-day visa Americans get in Vietnam, I made it to my destination in Hanoi. So I had traversed the entire country. And then I continued over to Europe. So if I could do a country by bicycle, I wanted to see if I could do an entire continent by bicycle. And then just kept going.
Did you encounter any bad weather while you were out there?
Okay, we encountered a lot of different extreme weather situations. In Sudan, we were riding in the desolate, wide-open Saharan desert. And the temperatures rose to 120 degrees on a daily basis. And then I guess just weather-wise, like juxtaposing all of that, with South America, they were in the absolute middle of winter.
Wow.
So when I arrived in the world's largest salt flats in Bolivia, I was in below freezing temperature every single night. And I was wild camping a lot. So I had to, you know, do all the tricks, right? Sleep with your water in your sleeping bag so it doesn't freeze. Warm up my hands on my little stove. I mean, I was wearing every single layer and it was hailing, raining, and sometimes snowing. I didn't mind cycling in cold weather. And I was actually sad that I just experienced that in the final continent because you wake up cold and you're warming yourself up with the activity, right? But then when you wake up in the desert and it's incredibly hot by, you know, by 6 a.m., I was dripping with sweat. And then when you're fighting a headwind too, you're just, it becomes a game about how much water should I pack.
Favorite country or continent?
Africa really sticks out for me. That's where it was like a tipping point for me of, oh, now I want to continue to cycle. I feel like I'm on to something. Also, Africa really made me realize that you can only prepare so much for something and then you just have to kind of let the experience take hold.
What advice would you give to someone that wants to take on a huge challenge like you did?
And something that really helped me is it's supposed to be scary. That's where the power lies, right? The uncomfortable, the unknown, that's really where we transform and we start to access our potential. But it's so scary, especially as a solo female on most of this journey. I learned this, I kind of have this motto now of courage, it's a callus. So there's a lot of neurological science behind this. So it really is a callus that you just have to build up over time when faced with these very terrifying yet exhilarating dreams.
Hello to our viewers in Canada watching on Rogers. Thanks for choosing Fox. For more, check us out at foxbusiness.com and foxnews.com.
All right, one of the big questions now in the Middle East is, will Iran retaliate against Israel? Israel for killing some of the Quds terrorist commanders of Iran. God bless Israel for that. Joining us now is David Friedman, the former ambassador to Israel. David, number one, what do you hear about Iranian retaliation? And number two, today in the White House press room, basically the press secretary says, with respect to an Iranian attack on Israel, that the U.S. is saying it's not our fight. It's not our fight. It's like they're a neutral party here, which blows my mind. Anyway, what can you tell us?
Well, look, Larry, it's good to be with you. I think that I think and I hope I'm right. I think the response will be underwhelming. I think it'll be symbolic. There'll be a response, but I think it'll be symbolic. You and I were in government when the president eliminated Qasem Soleimani, so we've seen this movie before. And in that case, you know, there was a response. And as I said, it was underwhelming. Look, I don't think Iran wants a fight with Israel. I think Iran is has got the best of both worlds right now. On the one hand, they're acting through the Houthis. They're acting through Iraqi Hezbollah. They're acting through Lebanese Hezbollah. They're acting through Hamas. Right. They're doing all these all this malign activity and the incoming is coming back against those entities, not them. They got a great relationship with America. America has given them $26 billion worth of cash transfer sanction relief just in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Why would they want to blow that, right? So Iran has it, you know, pretty good. They're hitting Israel. They're not getting hit back. They got lots of money. They're selling oil to Russia, which of course creates other problems for the United States. So I just don't think, I think they're entirely rational players, and I don't think they're going to mess this up. Now, is it America's fight? Of course it is, because America empowered Iran in the first place.
Right.
If it wasn't for the fact that, you know, they didn't, it's because they're not enforcing the sanctions that are on the books that are required to be enforced. The fact that they're not enforcing sanctions, and Iran is such a wealthy nation now compared to what it was when you and I left office back in 2020, when they were broke, of course that's America's problem. They caused this problem.
I mean, if
and,
you look at...
And unfortunately, if, I mean, to walk away from it...
Yeah. Right. You can't walk away from your best ally if, in fact, the Bidens still think Israel is our best ally. I mean, it's not as though Iran, it's not as though the United States is neutral or should be neutral with respect to Iranian terrorism, whether it's Hamas, Hezbollah, as you said, the Houthis. That just blew my mind. It's like it's not our fight. Of course, it should be our fight. And that, you know, all this, all the Bidens do, it seems to me, is attack Israel now. They're betraying Israel. They're betraying the hostages in all these deals. We should be talking much more about a full return of American and Israeli hostage. I'm running out of time. I got 30 seconds, David Friedman. Tell me what you think.
Well, look, I think, again, American competence and ineptitude from Afghanistan to Iran and elsewhere has made us less of a player. We should be doubling down to help Israel. We're doing just the opposite.
Yeah, that's it. Well, David Friedman, it's good to see you. And better days are coming. A cavalry's coming. That's what I hope. David Friedman, former ambassador to Israel. Folks, I'll be right back with my last word.
U.S. household is still paying more for everyday goods and services. That's according to data from Moody's Analytics chief economist Mark Zandi. Prices are higher by $227 per month compared to a year ago. Go back 2 years, the number jumps to $784. And prices are higher by more than $1,000 a month compared to 3 years ago. Internet packages now have a nutrition label. FCC rules that took effect Wednesday require internet service providers to have labels similar to the nutrition information on food packaging. Each internet package must have its own label with information including monthly price, whether the price is an introductory rate, when it expires, and what the new rate will be. The labels must also include download and upload speeds. The rule is currently in effect for larger internet service providers. The deadline for companies with less than 100,000 subscribers is October 10th. And the stilts from the first Star Wars movie are being auctioned. The chicken leg stilts were used by actor Peter Barber in Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Barber played the stilt monster in the film. The stilts are part of a Star Wars auction by UK-based auction house Hanson's. That's business. I'm CJ Papa.
The most fun about painting a mural is your public. You're right in front of everybody.
Near the intersection of West Broadway and Lindell Avenue in North Minneapolis.
I'm going to grab some brushes over here.
Charles Caldwell is hard to miss.
As you can see, it's a massive wall. It's 140 feet by 17 feet.
The artist's latest project is a mural he calls All Seasons.
It's a mural designed to reflect each and every one of our life.
Untouched for years, the exterior wall of Kemp's ice cream plant is his canvas.
When I got the call from Kemp's and they said, yeah, we want you to create something for this wall, I said, really? I said, man, I've been dreaming about this wall. I've been hoping that I could paint something on this wall ever since I was a kid.
As a longtime North Minneapolis resident, Caldwell's work, past and present, is part of the North Side landscape.
I hope that this contributes to the perception that there's beauty in every community, and especially in North Minneapolis.
With the help of four young apprentices.
Normally I do this by myself.
Caldwell's imagination runs far and wide.
I'm gonna be taking a trip out to a farm to take pictures of some actual milk cows.
Just across the street, in the parking lot of a busy strip mall, is a healing garden yet another Caldwell creation.
North Minneapolis has been very traumatized from all different perspectives in it, whether it's from a struggle of survival, financial hardship is heavy in this community.
He describes this area as a safe space.
Every day is eventful for me in this space, to give something out that I have.
A vibrant visual at the beginning stages.
One thing that I hope that this wall does to everyone that looks at it is make them smile. It makes me smile when I'm thinking about it.
With each stroke, Caldwell's inner vision comes into focus.
This mural is just part of the development of North Minneapolis, and I think this will get people excited about more of this and more confidence about seeing the kind of beauty that we all possess in this community.
When news breaks.
And we begin with this Fox News alert.
America turns to Fox News Channel.
We are feeling the impact all across the country.
Stream it now on the Fox News International app. It's the place for top political coverage.
It's a very big day here at the White House.
With must-see insight and analysis you won't get anywhere else.
We will never be the media mob.
And stay on top of the U.S. markets with Fox Business. Watch your favorite shows live or get them on demand. Download the Fox News International app now from the Apple or Google Play stores. Also available on Amazon Fire.
All right, EVs are lemons, like the Ford Edsel. Trouble is Biden should stop spending $1 trillion on these lemons, which raises inflation and reduces worker wages. Get rid of it. And David...
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.